Hey everybody, welcome into Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. She is Natalie Morris, and we are back with one of our, I think Tom Wheelwright is our most recurrent guest here on the podcast. Well, because he's so darn smart, and he knows, and his whole team at ProVision does our taxes. And so from time to time, questions come up from our investors and others just about simple things like, what about expenses? How do we account for expenses on our taxes? How do we capitalize them? How do we write them off? How do we depreciate our assets? All of those things are constantly being asked by our investors. And we've done a number of great episodes here with Tom, so we don't need to retread a lot of the older information. But some of these things have come up recently talking about specifically repairs. So today we felt we would do a whole episode on repairs. We'll keep it short and sweet and right to the point. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Clayton, Natalie. It's always good to be on the show. You guys do such a good job educating your investors, and that's why I love being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And you know, when I'll get a message specific that I just don't have an answer for, I will shoot you an email, and you're always great getting a response back. And I thought we should get this out there to the tens of thousands of people who listen to the show instead of just the one person who asked the question. So I always make a little note file when these types of questions come in, and it's worth having you back. So let's talk today. First of all, we're going to talk about repairs on an investment property. What constitutes a repair? How should we start to think about this as we, you know, either we're fixing up a property right when we bought it, or maybe a few years down the line? What constitutes a repair in your mind?
Well, let's kind of back up a second and look at the difference between a deduction and a capital improvement.
Okay.
So, because a repair, we think of, oh, I just repaired something, so therefore I get to deduct it currently, as opposed to having to capitalize it as a capital improvement. Capitalizing means I have to then add it to, you know, the cost of the project, and I have to depreciate it over a number of years, whether that's, you know, 5 years, 7 years, 15 years, or even, you know, 27 and a half, or even as long as 39 years in the case of commercial property. So that's the first thing we have to think of. And we have some new regulations. They've only been around for a couple of years, and they really help us, because we used to have to rely on court cases and we didn't really know what to do. And now we have really clear, what I think are actually really nice, clear regulations. And I think you really break it down to three situations is what I would do. The first situation is, what happens if I'm just starting out? In other words, I'm into my very first project. Well, the first thing we have to look at is, am I in business at all? Okay, because, you know, if you think about when do you open your business, you normally open your business when you're ready for customers. Okay, so in the case of real estate, it's really when that first property is available for rent. You don't have to have a tenant, but it has to be available for a tenant. So while you're doing that fix up, you're really in a startup phase of your business. And you really have to look at those as startup costs. And startup costs have their own rules with them. Okay, so what we look at is if it would otherwise be deductible, except that I'm just starting my business, I actually have to capitalize those, and I have to treat those as startup costs, and that's something you should absolutely go through with your CPA on how do I handle a startup cost, because that's what they are. They're basically going to be amortized over a period of years, okay, or deducted over a period of years. Then you have to look at, okay, I buy a new project versus I've got a project that I've been in for a while, because they're very different. When we look at what's a capital improvement, we're really looking at, are we genuinely improving the property from how we acquired it? Okay.
Okay.
So for example, let's say I've got, and I've been, you know, I've been investing in real estate for years and years. Let's say I've got a property, a house that, you know, every time I turn over a renter, right, I'm going to probably repaint, I'm going to put in new carpet, you know, I'm going to refresh it, right? Every time I've got a new tenant. Well, that doesn't improve the property from how I bought it, because when I first bought it, I did all that. Okay. So now when I do it for a new tenant, that's just a refresh. That's a repair, because I didn't improve the value of the property from when I bought it. Okay.
Interesting.
That's different than when I've got a brand new, you know, a property I'm just buying. If I buy a rundown property and I have to put in new carpet and new paint and stuff like that, I'm really improving the property. I'm making a more valuable property from what it was when I bought it. And so that's what the regulations call a betterment. And that's, they made up their own word for it, of course. So, you know, this is a betterment. I've actually improved the property from where I bought it. So it could be a repair. This is where it gets, you know, people get confused. It could be repair if it's something that, you know, I've had for a while, but at the same exact expenditure, I might have to capitalize if it's in a new project. Okay. Now there is an exception, and they actually gave us what I think is a very nice exception. And that is anything we spend less than $2,500 on, we get to expense. So that includes, by the way, folks, that includes dishwashers, that includes refrigerators, that includes cabinets, and it's every specific item. Okay. So you could actually spend $50,000 on a rehab, and everything that you did, okay, outside of maybe your payment to your contractor, okay, was under $2,500. You'd get to write all of that off. Now, the payment to the contractor, you might have a $10,000 payment to the contractor to do the work, you know, their fee. That's we're going to have to capitalize that one. We're going to have to depreciate over a period of years. But the individual items, like the cabinets, the dishwasher, et cetera, as long as they're under $2,500 each, and even your carpet, I mean, the chances are, you know, if you're talking about, small rental property, the carpet's probably under $2,500. So right, you're going to get to expense that, just what I call a de minimis. So that's just a rule that if it's under $2,500, we get to expense it. We just get to write it off. Doesn't matter what it's for.
And then do those things begin to depreciate immediately, like the carpet?
You get the expense. Well, okay. So if it's a repair, you know, or if it's this de minimis $2,500, we get to write it off immediately when we pay for it. Immediately. Okay. So we don't have to depreciate it over a period of time. We can take that.
Okay.
Nope. We can take it right then and there. So we could have literally a $20,000, $30,000 rehab as long as every expenditure, and that's not every invoice. You know, you can't just say, well, I'm going to pay, you know, bill me in three invoices and each invoice is going to be $2,000. No, if it's a $6,000 job, it's a $6,000 job. But if I get, you know, I get ceiling fans, each ceiling fan, as long as it's separately stated on the invoice, each ceiling fan, it's obviously going to be under $2,500. It's not the amount of the invoice, it's the amount of the individual item that I'm buying. So make sure that your contractor lists those individual items, because those are all going to be currently deductible, as long as you're already in business, of course, but they'll be currently deductible because they're under $2,500. Okay, so they'll meet that. Now, let's say that you do have to capitalize it, which means you do have to add it to the cost of the project. Okay, then it's going to depend on, this goes back to our discussion a few months ago about cost segregation. Then it's going to be, okay, what is it? Okay, so if it's fixtures, okay, and it's over $2,500, then it's going to be somewhere between 5 and 7 years. Again, your CPA can help you decide that. If it's land improvements, let's say you're putting up new fencing or you're putting in new landscaping, things like that, that's going to be over 15 years. And then if it's actually part of the building, then it's going to be over, you know, 27 and a half years, assuming it's residential property.
So on a repair, when people 10 years from now need to replace a water heater for $700-$800, that's an immediate repair. That's something they can immediately deduct that year.
That's right. Same with carpet. Now let's say, I mean, even if it's more than $2,500, you know, once you've owned the property for a while, anything that does not make it better than it was, you know, when you first improved it, okay, when you first had it out for that first renter, anything that doesn't have a significant, you know, improvement to the property. I mean, if you add a carport, that's a significant improvement, right? You've actually increased the value of the property by adding that carport on, or changing that carport to a garage or something like that. Or you add, you know, you have a two bedroom, one bath, and you add a third bedroom. Okay.
Right.
That's obviously going to improve, you know, the value of the project. And therefore you're going to capitalize that, and you're going to deduct it over a period of years through the depreciation.
That's great. I mean, so many people, they're worried about, oh, well, I want to, you know, I'm buy this house, so I'm gonna make it sort of bulletproof for 10 to 15 years before there's any repairs on the property, and then they're going to have to come out of pocket in those years. They're factoring that into their return on investment. But the idea that you could then immediately expense these repairs kind of even really helps alter that equation, right?
Oh, completely. Because you're looking at now, especially at, okay, you want to make sure. Now, remember, taxes all work together, right? You can't look at one portion of the tax law without looking at another portion of the tax law. This is why the tax strategy that we talked about before is so important. So you've got these repairs. They're going to create a loss. At first, you know, when you first do that, chances are, you know, you're going to have a loss on your tax return. Can right. you use that loss to offset other income? Well, you can always use real estate loss to offset other real estate income. But let's say because you've got a good loan to value, 70-80% loan to value. Let's say that you've got all these repairs, you're deducting all this, you've got this big loss. Can you use that? Remember, you either have to be a real estate professional, you know, against your business income, your wage income, real estate professional, or you have to be an active real estate investor, which and then your income's under $100,000. So a lot of people, their income's over 100, it's 100 to 150. Their income's, you know, up in the $200,000-$300,000 range, and they're going, okay, but I'm not doing enough real estate to qualify as a real estate professional. That's where what you really have to do is sit down with your tax advisor and come up with a way. There's always a way. I want to just be really clear. There's always a way to deduct those losses. I'm telling you, I will never qualify as a real estate professional, and my wife will never qualify as a real estate professional. We are full-time business owners, both of us. So we're not going to qualify as real estate professionals. That doesn't mean I'm not able to use my losses, okay? Because, of course, I always want to make sure that whatever I'm going to suggest to a client, I'm already doing myself, right? So I'm making sure that I have created a tax strategy where I can have income that can be offset by those losses. Now, if you're just if you're a wage earner and that's all you've got, it makes it problematic. But my experience is it's pretty rare that we can't figure out a way to use those losses. So if you go to your tax advisor and you say, well, you know, it's passive, you're not a real estate professional, therefore you're not going to be able to use those losses, you know, maybe it's time to think of a new tax advisor. Because my experience is that there is a way in 95% of situations to be able to use those losses. Because if you can't use the losses, it doesn't matter whether you take the expense or not, because you're not getting the benefit.
But then we have people who write us and they say, my accountant said that this is not it. And I'm like, well, I don't want to argue with your accountant, but also I don't have the right answer. You got to talk to my accountant then. So what should we say? Because I can't give out tax advice. And a lot of
times, no, and you shouldn't.
Well, that person said that that's wrong. So maybe I'm just saying to people who are listening, please don't ask me to argue with your accountant. I'm going to. Right. I also don't want to be glib where I'm like, well, you got the wrong guy. But that does seem like the right answer, right?
Well, I'd say most of the time that is the right answer. I mean, you know, here's the thing. Here's what happens. Is that as you grow as an investor or as a business owner, you're becoming more complex in your tax situation. By that definition, you go out and buy real estate, you're a more complex taxpayer than before you had real estate. And so you have to recognize that part of the cost of investing in real estate is a better tax advisor. And that's just the way it is. I mean, you just have to you must factor that in to your investing. If you don't factor your advisors, because, you know, you remember that how you invest has a big impact on your taxes, okay? How you invest. Well, if your tax advisor doesn't understand real estate from a tax standpoint, which is, it's a complex area, it is, okay? But if they don't understand real estate, then you're asking them for something that they can't possibly understand. It's not fair to them. Okay, so you're not being fair to them if you're asking them to do stuff that is outside of their comfort zone. Okay, because if it's outside of their comfort zone, now they're going, oh, now you're asking me to be aggressive. Okay, where, you know, when I look at aggressive, Aggressive means it's outside of our comfort zone. That's all aggressive means. Conservative means it's inside our comfort zone. Okay, meaning that, you know, if you have somebody who understands a lot of the tax law, then they can be, you know, they can do more things and for you and still be conservative. Whereas if you have somebody who understands very little of the tax law, they can do very little and still be conservative because they don't understand what's out. You know, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so it's so important. And you know, people ask me all the time. I've been around the world literally three times in the last 10 months. And people always ask, okay, so how do I know if they're a good tax advisor? And I would always say, and I know you guys are always recommending my book, and I appreciate that, but it really is the answer to your question, Natalie, is look, take tax-free wealth, give it to your advisor, and see what they say. Because I've never had somebody who was a competent advisor come back and say, no, I disagree with this.
He's wrong about everything, right?
Right.
My advisor said, I don't have time to read this. That's what they told me.
See, and that's the point. If they go, I don't have time to read this, then they're also not reading the tax law. They're not staying up to date. I guarantee you, if they're not willing to learn, you know, you're learning a whole new business in real estate, and you've got team members who aren't willing to learn with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's a problem.
Well, and there's, you know, not really good information on the internet about some of this stuff too. I mean, you talked about some of the changes to the tax code, being aware of some of the changes that we've seen recently, and just looking at, you know, just like Yahoo Answers for information on, you know, repairs versus improvements. I just literally did a Google search to see while we were talking about this. Almost everything in this article is wrong, you know, compared to what we were just talking about. It's all backwards. And I think it's so important for people to have this education. You talked about some of the changes to the tax code in 2014. What do those changes mean for real estate investors?
Well, it's huge because it means that now you've got a guideline on what is repairs and what do I have to capitalize. It's a really clear guideline. I read these regulations. I'm like reading them all the time, but particularly this time of year because it's tax season, and so I've got a lot of real estate clients, and I'm looking at these regulations going, okay, what qualifies, what doesn't, what's a repair, what's an improvement? And so I spend a lot of time in them. What I find, though, is that most tax preparers don't even own a copy of the regulations, let alone having read them. And that's part of my mission, obviously, is that it's not that I have a disagreement with good tax preparers. I actually don't. I'm totally, you know, if you have a good tax advisor, good tax preparer, and they're out there, okay, I know they are. Okay, it's not just my firm. There are good tax advisors, good tax preparers out there, but they're people who want to learn. I mean, anybody who's following you guys, I know they want to learn. That's why they listen to your podcast. They're there to learn. And if you've got a team members who aren't willing to learn, I think that you've got the wrong team members. And so number one thing is if you've got a tax advisor and you give them tax-free wealth, say, here, this is my gift to you. Please read this. And they say, I don't have time, or yeah, that, you know, I already know it all. I'm going, I've been doing this for 35 years. I guarantee you, I do not know it all. I mean, right. I spent 2 hours reading regulations because I have a personal tax situation I have to deal with. I've got a transaction I'm trying to deal with. I'm going, okay, how does this work? And I'm talking to other tax advisors. I mean, I've got an attorney that I talk to. I'm paying this attorney, okay, because I need somebody who has a different point of view than me. So I know this attorney. He actually teaches at Arizona State University in the law school. And I'm going, I need feedback here, okay? Well, if you don't have an advisor that behaves like that and you're behaving like that, you have a mismatch, okay? It's a mismatch of values. You value education, they don't. And anytime you have a mismatch among a team member, it's time to really reconsider, even if you like them, even if they're nice people, it's time to reconsider, is this the right team member for where I want to go? Because we all know, we've all had times in our life when we have to change people in our life because we've grown and they haven't. And it's painful, but we have to do it.
And this is not something, you know, when we get the bills for our, especially our estate planning through our law firm. And, you know, this is not something you should go cheap on. And that was kind of a hard realization for us last year. Yeah. I was like, whoa, we got to now pay the big bucks to set this up right, because it could cost us a lot if we do it wrong. But these are the types of things that, you know, cheap things aren't good and good things aren't cheap.
Well, right. And you know, just sometimes in my mind, we're constantly upgrading, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
we want to upgrade our car. We want to upgrade our home. You know, some of us have upgraded our spouses. I mean, I did, you know, and it, just because my spouse no longer shared the values that I had, right? Because I wanted to continue to learn and she didn't. Well, that was problematic for me. And it was so problematic for me because I'm learning so much all the time that it just created so much tension. We just couldn't live with it anymore. Okay. And she's a great person. She's just not, we just weren't in touch with each other. And I'm not saying go out and get a divorce to anybody. I'm just saying that there are always going to be times in your life. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want to grow? How bad do you want to move on to the next step? And if you want it badly enough, then you go, look, here's the difference. People who are casual investors, it's an expense to them. Any money they spend is an expense. People who are professional investors, when they spend money, it's to make more money, and it's an investment. And if you can get that concept down and change that thought process, I mean, everything in tax-free wealth is really just context, right? I mean, it's how do you think about taxes? Are they a penalty or are they a reward? Okay. Tax-free wealth, we look at it as a reward. Okay. You have to constantly be looking at what's my point of view, and it's going to evolve. If I want to be rich, I'd better behave like the rich, because otherwise I'm not going to get the tax advantage of the rich and I'm not going to have the success that the rich have, because I'm still over here thinking like a poor person or a middle-class person, and I'm trying to behave like a rich person. But you have to be the person before you can do. You know, it's the order is be, do, have, right? You have to be that person, then you do the right things, and then you have, you know, but you can't do them backwards. You can't say, well, I want that, so I'm just going to do these things, but I'm going to still be a poor person, or I'm still going to be a middle-class person. We have to change who we are, and a lot of that comes down to who you associate with.
And one great way to do that as we wrap this up, I know you've got a fantastic new product, and we're going to link to this in our show notes page for people who are just getting started. Maybe they know they need the education, but they don't know where to start. You've just rolled out a brand new fantastic tax product, which I've been going through it, and it's really just totally polished, beautifully done, and really, really excellent for someone who's just getting started with this. Can you tell us about it? And I'll link it up in our show notes page so people can get access to it.
Totally. So we're going to we're actually launching it. We only launch it a couple of times a year, and we're launching it in the next couple of weeks here. So and I know we're going to send an email to your group, and the emails basically invite you. Right. We give you a free report, and it's a 50-page report, and it goes through all the basic concepts that we go into in depth in the product. Okay. So we give you this 50-page free. Okay. It killed me to write it. I mean, it took me forever to write this, but we're just going to give it to you. And then what we're going to do is invite you to a webinar, and we're going to give you more free stuff. Okay, on the webinar, with the idea that, look, if it's something that you go, wow, I'd really like to get into this. I'd really like to understand what are the five ways to permanently reduce my taxes. What are those five fundamental ways that I can use every single day? Then you can look at, okay, well, then I'm going to get that education. Okay, but when we rolled this out originally, it was just a few months ago. We rolled this out. It took us like 2 years to develop this course. And the idea is, look, if you understand how the tax law works, you can literally be saving taxes every single day of your life. And you don't have to understand all the details. I mean, this does not go into all the details, okay? But you can understand how to save taxes every day of your life. We actually also give some tools. So I'm giving you a little heads up here. There's some tools in there that people can use. You can actually develop your own tax strategy. It's completely possible to develop your very own tax strategy just by using the tools in this course, because we started off just training and we kind of went into all these tools, and now basically we're kind of giving everything away, which is kind of where we start with tax-free wealth, right? Give all the information away, and whatever the book costs, we're doing the same thing with this. We're going to give it all away for a ridiculously low price, which we talk about in the webinar. And the idea is that we just want you to get the education, to reduce your taxes so that you can have that tax-free wealth down the road. And it's not complex. It's very simple. I mean, you've been through the course, so you know how easy it is to follow. And this is, I mean, hours and it's many hours of training, but it's really easy. It's broken down into very small segments, about 6 minute segments, 6 to 10 minutes. And it's really, I mean, seriously, you could do this while waiting in line at Disneyland. I mean, it's that simple.
Right.
That, you just kind of walk through this and, you know, some of it you go, I don't think this applies to me. Great. Move on, you know, go find the pieces that apply to you. But I'm very excited about it. It's been extraordinarily well received. And interestingly enough, Clayton, Natalie, is that it's been as well received outside the U.S. as it has been inside the U.S.
That's amazing. And
it is amazing because you think, oh, well, the tax law is so different in Australia than it is in the U.S., but they're not. They're not. I mean, the purpose of the tax law is the same everywhere. And so it doesn't matter where you are. You know, what state you're in, you know, the thing I always get is you can't do that here. I'm going, well, if you're willing to be open to the idea that you might be able to do that here, we walk you step by step on how to do it.
It's amazing. So the way to do it is to come over to our website, go to morrisinvest.com/podcast. You'll see this episode there with Tom, and then click on the free report, 50 pages, which you'll be able to download for free. And then you'll have to be invited because they're only opening it a couple of times for the year. So the beginning of this year right now, and then throughout maybe a little bit later if you miss it, but go down, download that free report. It is really fantastic information. And the course, you're right, it's like bite-sized, digestible. If you want to map out your afternoon and you want to do four of the different modules, you can go through it. And even though we work with your team, it doesn't matter. There's so much you can learn just to really wrap your head around the tax code, how to really take care of and build tax-free wealth for you and your family. It's a great refresher as well.
Yeah, it is. I we get such good comments, and you know, we're just trying to get more information out to more people. I mean, we're very mission driven, and we just want to get it out at the least expensive amount possible. And we're just very excited that people are responding. I mean, I was last week at a seminar that I was teaching. I had a tax advisor from Mexico and another one from Hong Kong come up to me and said, they've been through my course and they absolutely love it. And they're sharing it with all of their clients. They want all their clients to have it. I'm going, that's pretty cool. Have tax advisors come up to you and from other countries and say, look, this is the information. This is what we want to teach. And you figured out how to teach it. My skill set is teaching, right? And so, you know, we've simplified it, made it easy. We'd love to have, you know, anybody who's interested, we just love to have you join us. I mean, even if it's just for the, you know, the free report and the webinar, we love talking to your folks, Clayton. We talk to a lot of your people all the time. And a lot of your listeners are clients of ours, so we love that. We've just made this even easier, whether you're a client or not, to just make it really easy to understand what do I need to do every day to reduce my taxes.
Well, it's always a pleasure having you here on the show, and you elevate the level of conversation when you're here. Natalie had to duck out and go pick up the kids at school, but she just reminded me to not upgrade my spouse right now. So
I don't think you could upgrade your spouse.
I know.
But not, she might.
I know,
just
exactly.
Just careful about that. It plays both ways, pal.
Exactly. 100%. I'm not the one that needs – she doesn't need upgrading. She might need to upgrade me. Tom, it's always great having you here on the show, my man. Thanks so much. Good luck with the course. I can't wait for all of our listeners to check it out. And I'm sure we'll be talking once again, maybe even during the summer, as this new tax plan out of Washington starts to unfold. If we actually get it or not, we can talk about what it means for investors later this summer.
Absolutely. Be happy to do it. Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks. The great Tom Wheelwright, everyone. Check him out at provisionwealth.com. Sign up, become a client, because you will not regret it. And visit our website, morrisinvest.com/podcast, where you can learn all about all of the stuff we were talking about today, repairs versus improvements, and all of that great information as well. So we'll see you back here next week, everyone. Actually, no, tomorrow. What am I talking about? Thursday. We'll be back with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Until then, go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Bye, everyone.